According to the CDC, 15% of U.S. adults are living with chronic kidney disease. That's 37 million people. Global prevalence is estimated at about 840 million. But despite the clear patient need, kidney conditions have proven difficult to treat, often leaving patients with only high burden and invasive options like dialysis and transplant. PureSpring Therapeutics is a gene therapy company focused exclusively on changing that paradigm. I'm Matt Piller, and on today's episode of The Business of Biotech, we're going to learn about PureSpring and the technology it's developing to address kidney diseases, both rare and common. Joining me from London for the discussion is PureSpring CEO Richard Francis, who came to the company about a year and a half ago after 5 years as division head and CEO at Sandoz, and nearly 13 years before that at Biogen, culminating in the role of president and SVP of the U.S. Richard, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Matt. Really appreciate you having me on. Looking forward to our conversation. Thank you.
As am I. We're honored to have you on. And I want to start sort of with the genesis story, get some background on you and your connection to PureSpring. The company was founded just a couple of years ago, shortly before you joined, as I understand it. So let's talk about how and why the company formed up. And obviously, I did a little bit of research, a little bit of reading in the short time I had prior to this call. But I learned a little bit about the work of, tell me if I'm pronouncing this right, Professor Moin Salim. That was influential to PureSpring's development, and I want to kind of get the backstory on that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of questions within that question, Matt. I mean, so the genesis of PureSpring was Moin, Professor Salim, and the work he's done at Bristol over the last 25 years on kidney disease and really understanding the kidney, the pathophysiology of the kidney. And that sort of culminated in him really focusing on the podocyte, which is one particular cell in the kidney, a cell that sort of surrounds the glomerulus, which is really key to the functioning of the kidney. And as he says to me when we chat, when I'm amazed by the science, I say, the podocyte, this one cell seems to be so critical in kidney function, and it's quite unique. And he said, yeah, I've been working on it for 25 years. For 20 of those years, everybody thought I was mad. And now there are podocytopathy conferences. And so, although we're in a great place, I think credit to Professor Salim has worked tirelessly over many, many years and a couple of decades to get to the point where we have this understanding of the kidney, and particularly down to a cellular level and the podocyte. And we saw the work he'd done. He'd done some amazing in vitro and in vivo work. And we understood the unmet medical need, which we'll talk a bit about. But also Professor Salim is a clinician. So he's a pediatric nephrologist. So he treats children every day. And we saw the possibility of really transforming kidney disease. And he has a real passion to do that. So the great thing about working with him and as a researcher is he's desperate to get products to help patients. So research is an enthusiastic area of what he does, but ultimately he wants to treat patients. And that's the type of partner that I definitely wanted to have. And so I can go into a bit more detail, but maybe I'll just sort of pause there, Matt.
Yeah, well, I mean, so the image, the storyline that plays out in a layman like myself in my mind is like of this guy spending, like you said, 20, 25 years working on a specific thing. And you get sort of the mad scientist image, right? Like he's toiling away at this. For so long with very little attention, perhaps. And then one day there's, some development that makes this guy's work, integral enough or sturdy enough to launch a company on the back of it. So what was that? Like why was it a right time to form up this company on the back of this work?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, look, I think if you look at kidney disease innovation, just in the last 20 years, there has been no innovation. Okay. Yeah. And then there's a couple of things that I think have come together, which is a better understanding of the kidney and how it functions, as I've sort of described. But and also a lot of focus from other sort of academics, but also big pharma realizing that, as you said, 840 million, so close to a billion people suffer from chronic kidney disease. So this is a massive unmet medical need, which obviously attracts those companies. So there's better understanding, there's more money flowing into it. And then particularly, Moyne, did some in vivo work in mice where he's actually shown that he can, for want of a better word, cure a monogenic kidney disease in mice. And that was a pivotal moment because, obviously doing gene therapy in the kidney has never been done. Okay, so that's obviously a big barrier. And the ability to show some proof of concept work in vivo in mice, I think, was the one where people understood. He'd done many years of great work in vitro, and I can tell you a bit maybe about the fundamentals of this mad scientist. He, by the way, is a lovely guy and a pretty cool guy, and I'd love you to meet him.
Yeah, I didn't mean to make assumptions there.
No. Look, I mean, and actually, you chuckle at that. But, he is the world leader. I mean, he has developed the podocyte is the cell we're targeting, but he's developed the first human podocyte cell lines, mutated cell lines. And these are used around the world in laboratories. His cells are used to do experiments. He has some of the best animal models, which which can replicate the disease in humans. So he has all the components. And then obviously this culminated in some incredible work he did in these mice. And so for us, and for the VC backers in Kona, that was, I think, the key moment when, okay, this is real. This could happen. And let's form a company. And to that, to build on that, people have said, why did I join PureSpring? I mean, when I left Sandoz, I was thinking about, I'd already made the decision to move into an early stage company. We can talk a bit about that, why. But there were three things I was looking for. And that was great science, and I mean truly great, groundbreaking, a great platform, i.e. you could do multiple products. They weren't individual assets. And great financing with backers who wanted to go all the way. And as I spent about a year talking to many companies and VCs, I could often find one of those three things, often two, but never three. Mm-hmm. And I found all three at PureSpring, and Moyne was a key part of that because the science is amazing. And we have a platform, which we'll talk a bit about, because I think, and you can tell me, Matt, the word platform is thrown around in biotech so much.
Yeah.
And I think, I think it's almost been devalued a bit, but I think we have a true platform, the truest sense of the word.
Yeah. We could spend a lot of time talking about the word platform and its the many variables and the variable definitions of the meaning. And yeah, but we won't do that. We'll get into your platform shortly, but you brought up a point that I did want to ask you about. And that's the fact that, you spent lengthy stints, by the way. Like when I look at Sandoz and Biogen and the amount of time that you spent with each of those companies, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to say it's atypical, but it's probably uncommon for guys of your stature and position to stick around in a position for as long as you did. And then with a stable, steady, big biopharma company, and then to make the decision like, hey, I'm going to go out there and try something new with a company that, is brand new, built on the back of those things you just mentioned, good science, a good platform, and good backers. But still, there's a step away from a comfort zone that has to come with that, the decision to make that move. So why for you personally? I mean, not just like, okay, there's a great opportunity here, but for you personally, what motivated that decision?
Well, I'm really glad I didn't talk to you, Matt, when I was trying to make that decision. You're to give me some real second thoughts. So look, I had the privilege to work, run Sandoz, an amazing company, and to be part of Novartis and sit on their executive committee, their deal committee, and their R&D committee. And so I got exposed to some incredible people, some incredible science. And I just saw how fast it was moving. Then I saw some of the acquisitions we were doing, and obviously I was privy to those, the Avexis, the AAAs, the medicine companies, where, and Avexis obviously being a gene therapy company, where I started to think, my goodness, no matter how much budget you have in R&D, you know, where the science truly emerges from is becoming not directly correlated to that. So great science is popping up everywhere around the world now, which is great, I think, for not just us as an industry, but I think for patients who need to break through therapy. So I start to realize, and when we bought AveXis, or Novartis bought AveXis, that company had only been formed in 2014, and it was launched products. Novartis got the products to the market, and they launched, I think, in 2018, 2019. So I realized, you know, in some of these platforms or some of these modalities, the speed from idea to actually having a treatment had been compressed, and we could talk a bit about that. So I think, you know, that opportunity at Novartis really exposed me to that change in the science and almost the liberation of it. And so I thought, okay, finding great science is the key. Getting the right amount of money to prosecute that science is obviously an important component. But then if you build the right company and you find the right people and you create the right organization and culture, then I think, you know, you can really have a transformative effect in some disease. And I got really excited about that. And the more I looked into it, the more I thought, yeah, I think the sector's changing. I think this idea that you're big or you're a startup, I think it's changing. I think the science is everywhere now, and it's the idea of finding the good and executing on that. And so that's what really encouraged me, and I got really excited about it. I met a lot of people, and I thought, yeah, I want to do this. And okay, there is the comfort of being part of a big organization. You're right. But I think I've always been driven a bit more by purpose. You know, what am I trying to do? What impact do I want to make with the people I work and the areas I work in? And I thought, as great as that can be in Sandoz and a company like Novartis, I thought here there's an opportunity to do something which clearly, as I've said, there is no treatment for kidney disease. It's dialysis or transplant.
Yeah.
That really encouraged me. So I thought, yeah, I want to be part of it. And I want to be part of growing a company and building it from scratch. So I can't hang around the water cooler and go, why does a company do this? Who is the Muppet that came up with this idea? I can't do that anymore.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. The Muppet's looking at himself in the cup of water, the water cooler. You know, you bring up an interesting point, and we could belabor that. We could drill down on this point all day long, and I don't want to, but you bring up this interesting point around, you know, maybe that disparity between big pharma and small kind of innovative emerging pharma is shrinking. Maybe it doesn't matter so much anymore. It's just that philosophically, it's an interesting point. I mean, we've always known that a lot of great innovation comes out of, you know, emerging, new and emerging biopharma. But I think the model has always sort of been pretty rote, like, yeah, some cool innovation. As soon as it starts to look like cool innovation, it's going to get snapped up by big bio and away it goes. But this sort of, I guess, democratization of access to cool, innovative science—that's really neat. And I could see where that would be alluring to a guy like you coming out of Biogen and Sandoz. So tell me about your role in the formation of the company. Because you joined as CEO in January 2021. The company was formed just shortly before that, but were you directly involved in sort of the shaping of the company prior to your assumption of the CEO's role?
Yes, I was in the limited sense of what you could describe as shaping. When I speak to Chris Hollywood, who's the COI at Syncona, the VC who backed PureSpring to the tune of $60 million, which is a pretty serious Series A. He was talking to me well before the company was formed. We got to know each other, and he said, look, I found something I think is really, really cool, and I think it could be big and amazing. It could go all the way. And we started talking about it, and so I started to learn more. And so I was speaking to my professor Sleep way before when the company was formed. And so, you know, there was a lot of understanding. And then, so it was really... I was well up to speed with what the company was, and I made a decision to join way before January. That was more about timing and logistics. I was living in Germany at the time still. But yes, we did. But the forming was really getting the documents done, getting the financing in, and that was it. And I can remember joining at Moyne. It was Moyne, myself, and Ronnie, our CMO. And that was sort of the company, obviously a couple of others. Gavin and a great scientist that came out of Bristol, Val, and that was sort of it. We had nothing else, and then we had this plan to do amazing things, and we had nothing. We didn't have any labs, we didn't have any offices, and so it was, we didn't have any plans. So then it was like, we've got to put this all together, and that was a bit of a change from what I'm used to. But and we'll probably talk about it, you know, in the last year and a half we've accomplished a huge amount, but there wasn't a lot of formation apart from really understanding the opportunity, what it would take to prosecute it in the highest level strategically and planning, and what sort of money would be needed. And then it was sort of, here's the keys, go make it happen. And that's what we've been spending our time doing.
Yeah. All right. I want to get into some of that, the mechanics and sort of, you know, the what behind, here are the keys, let's make this go happen. But real quick before I do, I do have to ask you this, $60 million series A, maybe 62 million to be precise, if I'm not mistaken, I don't remember. Anyway, that's healthy. I mean, that's a very, very good starting point. And it occurs to me that perhaps it was also timely because, you know, it happened sort of on the brink of, a market's, I don't know if we want to call it a slump yet, but things are kind of in the gutter right now as far as the equities markets are concerned, capital in biotech. How do you feel about that? Like, do you feel like, oh, good, I'm glad we did that when we did. Is there any concern about like what comes next and where the markets are heading and access to capital you may need? Or do you feel like you're pretty well healed as far as the cash runway is concerned right now?
So look, I mean, it's a great question. So firstly, and it's a really important part. So for me, PureSpring is not about raising capital and doing an IPO and what are the data inflection points to do an IPO. That's not what we're about. We're about becoming a fully integrated biotech company that's going to launch products on the market. We're going to commercialize those. We're going to manufacture those. We're going to have a full pipeline in clinic, in preclinical, in discovery, all the time. Now, I say that, and actually, by the way, Matt, I presented that to the board. The first board meeting, the first slide I had was a slide titled "Begin with the End in Mind." Mm-hmm. And the end in mind was this company that is treating multiple kidney diseases, what it looks like, and components of how many products, what type of people we've hired, what's our culture, how we even maximize the pipeline, what sort of pipeline do we have, ideas about what we could be valued at. And I put that up not to be, rah-rah, here's where we're going. It was to say, let's be clear on the goal. The goal is to take products from discovery to patients and to take multiple products. So, the idea is to have a product, coming out very frequently from the clinic into the marketplace, from preclinical into the clinic. So that is the destination. Are we all aligned with it? Because if we're not, let's talk about it now. And I show that slide every board meeting since as the first slide, which is begin with the end in mind. So that's, I'm not answering your question, but so I will. So when I ask about the capital markets, then capital is a really important component of what we need to get to that destination. And so we have to think about it. But I also think that what we have here at PureSpring, from a platform and the number of diseases we can go after and the unmet medical need, I'd like to think that despite the challenging environment, as and when we need capital, people will understand the opportunity that PureSpring is bringing and the breadth of the opportunity it's bringing and the intent we've started with. We have a CMC strategy. I just sat through this morning, and we're building a CMC strategy as if we're commercializing multiple products. We're not trying to work out, can we make the stuff for the clinic? We're already beyond that, and we're only 18 months old. So I think that gives us the potential to think a bit differently and maybe to get capital, even in the tougher times, when we do need it. But who knows? When I go out there, cap in hand, maybe they'll all be laughing at me and saying, hey, you're not getting my money. But we'll see.
Was there, and I keep saying, I want to get into the science. I want to get into the pipeline. We'll get there. We'll get there. But man, you just keep saying things that intrigue me. And one of them is, so you said, you know,
that worries me.
I don't know. It's great. This is great. One of the things you said was, you know, you throw the slide up from day one, begin with the end in mind. And it takes me back. Like, I've been doing, this is, I don't know, this is going to be episode 90 something of this podcast. I think it was like episode number two, maybe. I had on the show Francois Nader, who is, he was, I think at one time the chairman of the board, if I'm not mistaken, but he's still on the board, has been on the board of Moderna for a long, long time. He's a super well-decorated industry veteran in the biopharma space. And that the episode, like, we could have titled it that, begin with the end in mind, because it was what, you know, what he preached. And I've heard it several times along the way on you know, having these discussions with many, many biotech execs over the past couple of years. But the thing that that I wonder about is, so here you are, you know, from the outset, presenting your pitch deck, right? Your company, your company mission, you know, looking for money. And it's a pretty gutsy thing to say, like, Hey, I know, you know, we're asking you for money and you might be looking for some quick return. And there may be opportunities for that along the way when folks come along and want to snipe this candidate or, you know, snipe this project and take it off our hands for a healthy sum. But that's not what we want to do. That's not what we're going to do. Does it take, you know, well, one, does it take the guts? I think it takes to go in and say, we're going to start this company and we're going to take it to the finish line. That's the intent. I mean, things may change along the way, but that's the intent. And then two, when you're looking at the investment community and you're saying this as a company that's starting from the mad scientist in the lab, right? Here are the keys. You got the idea. You have nothing else. Go make it happen. Is there pushback or concern from the investment community about a company that comes out of the gate, like as an infant swinging for the fences?
Yeah, so look, I think, firstly, does it take guts? I've never thought of it like that. And in a way, I'd say no. I absolutely believe this is possible. I'm not, you know, painting something up, you know, making it look good and thinking, you know, maybe people will, you know, believe in that. I truly believe it. Now, maybe a bit naive, maybe I'm a fool, but I truly, truly believe in it. And the more I'm here, the more I believe, okay? So the first thing, and the second thing is I believe in complete transparency. I've worked with some amazing, you know, executives. I mean, blessed to sort of work alongside them or below them. And I think, you know, I think transparency is key. So when I talk to investors, and the other thing I started to do is I, as soon as I arrived, I started talking to investors, even though I didn't need money. And they said, well, why are you talking to me when you don't need money? I said, because I want to get to know you, and I think you need to get to know me, and you need to understand the company, what we hope to do. And then I think you need to hold us accountable to whether we do what we say we're going to do. Because I think half the challenge in starting a company is you have this great idea, this great vision. You have an idea of how you're going to get there. And some days you're just going swimmingly well, and you're just, you know, straight along the straightest route, and other days suddenly, you know, there's a curveball and it can stop. But I believe in sort of setting out your stall, saying how you're going to get there, what you're going to do, what's going to happen along the way, and what you hope to achieve. Mm-hmm. And what I'm hoping in those conversations that we can show that we can execute and achieve things. Now, sometimes it won't always work out, but be transparent, don't overpromise, be clear about where the risks are. But on things you have to execute that you own, execute them. So for me, it's, I truly believe we're going to get there. It's not a if, it's a when. Now, and then I just want to keep saying to people, when I talk to investors, this is how we're going to do it. Now, some will say, and I say, look, I don't want people who want quick money. This is not what we're in. We're in the long game, and we're in for real value creation because we're going to go long, I'm going to go all the way. And that may not be for everybody, but yeah. I don't want to pretend. I want to be up front. Now, I'm at the start of the journey, so, you know, maybe this will work out, maybe it won't, but I do believe that's the right way. And I've seen that when I was in public companies, when you do earnings calls, be honest, be transparent, do what you say you're going to do. you know. And when you don't know, or when you run into trouble, be clear about it. How are you going to solve it? So I think so far the reception from, you know, speaking to investors has been very positive. But, you know, we're at the start of a journey. Let's see if it's positive in a year or 2 years. Did we do what we say we're going to do? And did we do it to the standard? We'll see. But, you know, that will come back to another conversation we'll have. How do you execute? I mean, you mentioned something about there's been a change and these small biotech companies. I think there was, and there still is, in any big or small, can you execute? You know, big companies, you have a lot of things to execute. And in small companies, you have one or two. But in this company, every day we come in and we're focused on one thing, right? And I think our level of focus and dedication give us a competitive advantage. And it's everything for us. Yeah. So I think a lot of it's going to come down to the people we hire, and we'll probably talk about that. But yeah, hopefully that answers your question. So I hope not too much guts are required. It's more belief and keeping believing and then executing.
When you're striving to excel in a new arena, the best guides are the ones already doing it well. The business of biotech brings those voices forward to help new and emerging biopharmas turn their innovations, like mRNA and cell and gene therapies, into clinical realities. Tune in and subscribe for insights on hiring, regulatory, and other need-to-know topics for biopharma leaders. The podcast is brought to you in collaboration with Cytiva. Check out their resources at cytiva.com/emerging biotech. That's cytiva.com/emerging biotech. Yeah. Well, thank you for indulging those questions. You probably didn't anticipate that I was going to come on here and like delve into your psyche, but I appreciate your willingness. What do you want to talk about? You want to talk a little bit more about the indications that PureSpring's seeking to address? You don't want to jump right into the technology that you guys are developing?
Well, I can't tell you about the indications, I'm afraid, Matt, because we're sort of not releasing those yet. What I would say is we're taking on three programs. We've got three programs running right now. We have ambitions to bring more programs into preclinical in the next 12 plus months. And I mentioned that just because that shows we have a platform. If you didn't have a platform, you wouldn't be able to do that at that regularity. So that's sort of was. I can't tell you the case, but let me maybe talk to you a bit about why I think we've got a pretty exciting proposition here. So, obviously in gene therapy, we're targeting a cell. We're targeting one cell in the kidney, the podocyte. Yeah. Now, often is the case in gene therapy, you'll target a disease, but you'll have to target a different cell for that disease, and obviously have a different gene of interest to insert within that cell. We're targeting one cell, which is really unique. Now, people say, you're targeting one cell, doesn't that create limitations? It could do, but not with the podocyte. The podocyte, in the research that Professor Salim has done, shows, we believe, that over 60% of kidney diseases, the podocyte is central to that. So we think this gives us an opportunity to address multiple kidney diseases and have multiple indications by targeting one cell. Now, the reason why that's exciting in gene therapy is because all the things you develop that are required for gene therapy, things like, you know, your capsid, your promoter, that platform will be used for all of our programs. The one thing we hope to change is just the gene of interest that you insert within that. Mm-hmm. But the promoter we'll have will be a promoter specific to the podocyte. The capsid we develop will be, you know, a capsid specific to the kidney and the podocyte. So, you know, we have this platform, and that means each program we bring forward, you know, has a potential to have a reduced in timelines, in risk, in regulatory challenges, and in cost. So I think that's really interesting. So we found a cell which is integral in many kidney diseases. We have a great understanding of it through the work that Professor Salim's done. We have some great models in vivo, and we have the in vitro cells. We then have a platform from a CMC point of view we can really leverage. And then I think the third maybe leg on the stool is route of administration. You know, as you probably know, there are challenges around going systemically in kidney.
Yeah.
With gene therapy, in gene therapy. And we're going direct to the kidney. So, you know, we believe we've got some really interesting components. We've got one cell we're targeting, a great understanding of it. That gives us a, you know, a platform from a construct, you know, the things that we put around that gene of interest. And then ultimately we have a route of administration, which is direct to the kidney, which we hope allows us to use a lot lower dose to treat the diseases, which obviously we believe will address some of the side effects and toxicity issues that can occur, but it'll also allow us lower dose to have a lower cost of goods, which will allow us to have more flexibility around how we price these products going forward, which is important because the other thing I'd say is we're not going after just rare diseases. We're going after monogenic and non-monogenic diseases. So our ambition is we'll obviously target small rare diseases where the monogenic is well understood, but we're going to go after big populations as well. And so that cost of goods becomes pretty important.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you just opened up opportunities for a whole bunch of follow-up questions. I'm trying to figure out which one I want to ask first, but I guess I'll start with, you know, you mentioned CMC. So I want to get into manufacturing. And again, I guess I can't ask this without making it a multi-part question, but we've ascertained the potential for large patient populations without naming any specific indications. We've ascertained that there is a large potential patient population. We've ascertained that you're, from your purview, ahead of the game on CMC, on the CMC front. So tell us, I guess, what you can about what that might look like from a manufacturing and volume standpoint. Like, how is the therapy manufactured, for lack of a better term? And then two, you know, move into what potential clinical volumes you might be looking at in the not too distant future.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think, a lot of that, you know, I don't really want to sort of go, keep saying I'm being secretive, but I think from a manufacturing point of view, one of the key things we're doing is to make sure we're building our manufacturing capability to launch our products into the market and be able to launch them in populations which are significant. Right? Mm-hmm. So when we set out, Julian Hanek is our, you know, CDO, head of CMC, who worked at Biogen prior and was part of Nightstar, one of the first gene therapy companies. It was an ocular company. And so he's brought a huge wealth of experience. That's another thing, you know, has been important in PureSpring as we put the team together. Have we got real depth? And in that area, you know, with Julian and the team he's built out, actually, I was talking to him yesterday, I think we have over 120 years of gene therapy manufacturing capability in this company already.
Yeah.
And I can say that's not because Julian's that old. He's not. he's not the Dumbledore of CMC.
Well, just no, maybe he is that old. He's just really good at gene therapy.
Pretty good at gene therapy. So what we're doing is we have, and I'll give you the whole remit here and tell me if I'm boring you, but it's an important part. CMC is an important part of our strategy. We want it to be something which helps us as a company, not something that we're just trying to mitigate and make sure it doesn't trip us up, which I know has happened in the past. And so we've set up our CMC to make sure that we can commercialize our products, but they're also that it's agile in that we can move fast and quickly to get our products through preclinical into the clinic and beyond. So you have to think about the agility to do that, but then long-term, and what we call our sort of phase three, is we want to have the capability to make sure our manufacturing around our platform, you know, which can have multiple products, is able to achieve consistency of supply, consistency of yield, productivity, and most importantly of all, a really competitive COGS. Because as we go into large populations, we want to be able to have a manufacturing capability and COGS that allows us to price the gene therapy in a way that can be absorbed and handled by healthcare systems around the world. So, although we can be having a dramatic impact on diseases. I think if we're going to go into big populations, we can't expect healthcare systems to digest big prices. And so how do we avoid that, knowing that the cost of developing research and developing gene therapy is really high, and cost of manufacturing can be high. So we're addressing those now. And that's why, you know, we've taken this approach to manufacturing, which is begin with the end in mind. We need to make this manufacturing seamless. We need to have it as cutting edge as possible to allow us to address the patient population in a way that just doesn't deliver efficacious and safe product that can't be afforded. It has to be an efficacious, safe product which healthcare systems and payers can afford to pay and will want to pay.
Yeah. Yeah. Will the entire effort be internalized, or will you be working with outsourcing partners?
A bit of both. And that goes back to our strategy. We have this agile. So right now we're working with partners because we want to move fast. Yeah. And we can't build a factory overnight if we wanted to. So we're working with partners, and, you know, once again, based on the experience we have in the team, we're picking people we've worked with, we know that can deliver quickly and with high quality equipment, a high quality product. Then we're going to move into sort of a hybrid strategy. So we start with what we call agile, and then we move into hybrid. And in hybrid, we're going to bring in some of the work internally, because we think that can really be critical in our long-term future. So some of the areas around CMC, we'd want to start to bring in-house, and we've already started to build the capability to do that. So we're sort of almost in phase two. And then long-term, it's a question of, you know, do we create long-term partnerships with, you know, CMOs, or do we build something ourselves? And, you know, we mapped out the timelines of when we need to make that decision. And, you know, that decision will always go back to what is our goal. Our goal is to be able to make sure we can always supply high-quality product across our platform in a timely manner for the clinic and for the market at a cost of goods, which allows us to price the product in a way that can be actually afforded by the healthcare systems. So right now we're outsourcing. Longer term, we'll see if we go to a long-term partnership or whether we actually put together our own facility, which is something I've done in the past at Sandoz. Obviously, we have many manufacturing sites, and so I've seen what it's like to build sites and get them up and running. So that's something that I'm under no illusions to what it takes, but at the same time, it doesn't necessarily worry me. But I don't need to build a factory to think I'm a proper biotech company.
Yeah. Have you found the outsourced market up to the task? Have you found the capacity for starters? Have you found the intellectual capacity as well, in addition to manufacturing capacity, to meet your needs? Has that been challenging? Do you anticipate that being a relatively easy row to hoe, or do you, you know, everyone's struggling to some degree with outsourcing relationships right now? And when I think about it in the context of a therapy that's as complex and new as what PureSpring is developing, it just makes me wonder what the CMO landscape looks like in terms of its ability to kind of work with you.
Yeah, no, it isn't straightforward, and there are a lot of people and a lot of companies, not just in CMOs. I think all companies can sometimes consciously or unconsciously overpromise, and so I think the due diligence that the team have put around who do we partner with, why do we partner, do we think they can deliver, has been extensive, and deliver on their technical capability, but deliver on their to hit timelines and to hit the volumes. So we've spent a lot of time doing that, and you know, there are some scar tissue on some of the people I've hired who have been burned, where, you know, companies thought they could do it and they weren't able to deliver. So we spent a lot of time picking the right partners, and we continue to do due diligence. And obviously, with an experienced team, they have experience with many of these, and they've learned which are the ones that are performing and happy performing. And then we got a plan. We've done all our long-term planning. What volumes do we need going forward? What is the capacity that's being built around the world? You know, there's a lot of gene therapy manufacturing capability that's been built? When will it come online? When will it be ready? Who's going to run it? You know, is that something which we could plan for? So we're constantly doing that. We're looking at over a 5 to 10 year period, because that obviously plays into, you know, our long-term strategy. There has been difficulty in getting, I think, manufacturing slots in the past, but it's amazing how, you know, investment follows that opportunity, and manufacturing sites have been built all the time. And suddenly, you know, you could have an excess of capacity, you know, and what does that lead to? Does that lead to more flexibility, better pricing? But will that last? And then will the next wave of gene therapies come through and suddenly? So I think we're constantly evaluating it. But right now, I think we feel okay. The other thing that is worth noting is, you know, CMOs and CDMOs are attracted, which is a bit unusual because we're young. But they see the platform. They see that we have three programs. They see that we're going to have more programs. They see that we're going to be, you know, constantly developing multiple drugs for multiple indications in kidney disease. So they think, okay, so this isn't a one disease company.
Yeah, these guys can keep us pretty busy.
Well, exactly. And we're sort of telling them that. And what's interesting is some of them just aren't used to hearing it. They're going, okay, yeah, let's just negotiate the first one. We're going, well, yeah, but we've got three already. So we can't do one. We need to negotiate three. Yeah. And so I think that gives us maybe a little bit of advantage that we may be small, but we have a lot of potential.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We're running short on time here. I feel like we could make a 2-hour episode. We can make a 3-hour episode. How much time do you have, Richard? You want to just hang out all morning?
Yeah, I can hang out all morning. It's the afternoon here. As long as you can buy me some coffee, I'll stay on a bit.
We do need to start wrapping things up here, but I want to fully understand, so, you know, there's the platform, and again, we could have a big discussion about what that means. But in reading about you guys, I read about FunCell. Is this part of integral to the therapeutic development platform? Is it more of a pre-step to the platform? Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's another interesting thing. I don't talk enough about it. I feel a bit sorry for FunCell.
So it intrigued me. I mean, you tell me if you don't talk about it because Richard Francis is about the next FunCell from the from the Pure Spring portfolio, then we don't need to talk about it. We can talk about something else. But I found it to be intriguing. I kind of wondered how it fit into the equation there.
No. Look, I mean, I think I want to talk about it. So obviously, one of the things about gene therapy is finding the target to go after. Yeah. You know, some of our diseases we're going after really well characterized because Moyne's done a huge amount of research. We know some of the diseases, we know the genetic disorders, and we know the pathways that are clearly characterized. So we're sort of in a good place from what diseases we're going to go after. That said, you know, one of our other co-founders, a Professor Marajiaka, he came up with the FunCell, which is the functional selection platform, which is an unbiased screening platform, which allows us, in its most simplistic terms, is to find targets for gene therapy in the kidney. It actually allows us to find targets in any part of the body, actually. Mm. And actually, so FunCell is a screening platform that we will use in PureSpring to find new targets, to find new diseases we can go after and create new products. But also, we're going to out-license that capability to other companies.
Yep.
So they can, I think of it as something which we want to share with people, and we're talking to other companies now because they want to use that screening platform to identify targets, you know, in the therapeutic areas they're going after. So it's really exciting, and it goes back to that beginning with the end in mind. We want to have a really deep pipeline of PureSpring. So how do we get that? You can, you know, hope is not a strategy. So we have some three programs now. We have some good other ideas coming forward. But FunCell is there to help us bring a wave of new targets forward, which we can start to put into discovery. And we understand whether those are, you know, targets and indications that we can prosecute.
I was going to ask you about whether that out-licensing opportunity was going to, you know, be part of the plan for FunCell? Because, I mean, there's an entire cottage industry around companies who offer that that service to companies like yours. Is there an inherent advantage to having it, having that capability in-house for a company at your stage in the game?
Well, I think the advantage is we understand it. I think the advantage is we want to prosecute that platform because we want to get targets ourselves. I mean, we're real. And I think when we do that, and by the way, Syncona have set up another company called Forcefield based on what FunCell, some targets that have been found. So it works. And I think, you know, what I think about being there on the receiving end of somebody selling me a screening platform, then I think that becomes more credible when the company selling it to me are using it themselves to create their own pipeline. So I think it's inherently valuable for us in PureSpin because we can get more targets and a richer pipeline. And I think we're quite good at promoting that because we're using it ourselves.
Yeah, very cool. I'm going to let you choose the wrap-up topic here. I could ask you a generic question like, you know, what's the next big project on Richard Francis's plate, or what's the, you know, biggest challenge you face coming down the pike? I could ask you about, you know, your next big hire. I don't know. But it's been a long morning already. We've been on the phone for some 50 minutes. I'm getting tired. I'm going to let you pick the closing topic of conversation.
Okay. So look, I'm going to take all those three questions and put them into one.
And maybe that's kind of greedy, Richard.
Exactly. Well, look, I think you touched on one thing there, which I thought you'd asked me earlier. You didn't.
I didn't. What was it? What did I just listen? I never promised anybody that I was good. I just started doing this. 90 episodes. We just started doing this. So I never said I was good. People still tune in. Tell me what I did wrong.
Well, no, you didn't do wrong. So it's interesting. So people say, you know, it's the most important thing, you know, science and something I've always believed in my career, but it becomes so acutely obvious now because it's the one factor that will make the difference. So the science is great. The real challenge is hiring great people and creating a culture where they can really flourish. I know that's such an overused line by all people in my position, but when you're sat in an office of two people at the start, right, the third person you add can transform what you can do the next day.
Yeah.
The fourth person. And so as you add them, you have an opportunity to create not a ripple effect, a massive wave of positivity across the organization. If you get it wrong, it's felt acutely. So what I found is, and I knew it, but it's so more evident now, if we hire really well, and I mean exceptionally well, and then we look after our team well, and we create a culture, a truly special culture, where right now we have 30 people, and I would say it feels like from an energy and productivity, it feels close to 50, right?
Yeah.
Now, hiring well and putting the right culture around people is super hard because you've got timelines, you've got pressure. We really need somebody. And we've got to keep the discipline. So I think the thing that's constantly on my mind is not the next in vitro and vivo experiment, is who is conducting those experiments, who will help us going forward. How many resources do we have? How well does the team work together? How transparent are we? How much do we embrace failure and not let it, you know, damage us or set us back, but motivate us to go forward? If you get that right, if I can, and the team I have, which is a great team, if we can keep getting that right and keep making sure our team well-resourced, have the right culture around them, we keep hiring people who can magnify what we have here, then we'll have no problem. But that doesn't happen easily. And that's why, you know, as I hire, I take it incredibly seriously. I spend a huge amount of time on it. Because you get it right, it's a game changer. You know? Yeah. I mean, look at it. To take to close, as there may be some Americans listening to this.
Yeah.
I probably shouldn't do this because it's a sport I only know a bit. But, and I know this is a guy you're sick of, but to come back to Tom Brady, he moved from one team to another team.
Yeah. Awfully polarizing right now. Awfully polarizing.
But he made a difference. Yeah. He made a difference. Yeah. And I'm a Pats fan, so I didn't want to see it happen. But that was maybe the one piece of the jigsaw that was missing, that if that wasn't put there, that could have never happened to the Buccaneers. So people are really, really important. And I said, you've got to focus on that. And that doesn't happen easy. And when you're trying to pull people away from big pharma and big biotech, and you started the conversation with, yeah, that was an easy life, or it was, you know, you could stay there forever. What's going to make them come here? It's not necessarily me being sort of enthusiastic about the company. It's them seeing who else has come. And then when they see who's coming here, you must have something special there. And I've heard the culture's special. So if I could do anything, and maybe it's a bit of a recruitment drive, if anybody listens to this podcast, is, you know, if you're talented, you're really talented, and you can work well in a team, then maybe think about PureSpring.
Yeah, think about PureSpring. You know, and as you were talking about that, and I certainly don't want to minimize it. I'm actually very intrigued and curious about something that I've learned over the course of this podcast project around hiring, and that is, and it's really cool because you guys are like a case study in it, because I got to meet you sort of at the very early stages of the company, but it's kind of been really neat for me to study the progression of specific titles and hiring specific titles and functions and responsibilities at certain points along the way of your journey into and through the clinic. Like it's very, there's a strategy there that's like worthy of, a dissertation, who to hire, when, and how. And I don't mean to minimize, the importance that you put on it, because it's very clear that it is extremely important and you're very scrupulous about those decisions, but I have to imagine that your financial standing helps too, right? Like it's a lot, I don't want to say it's easy, but it's got to be a lot easier to be able to lure amazing talent when you've got a bit of money to spend on that amazing talent.
Well, but the trouble is, some of these people, it makes it a bit easier because it shows more conviction that we're going somewhere. But you touched on something there, which going back to begin with the end in mind, we're hiring people here for the destination. We're not hiring people to get us a couple of miles down the road. Mm-hmm. And that's hard because, we're hiring people who maybe have more horsepower than we need right now, but they'll definitely help us get there. And that's a challenge because that means these are people who have come with experience and they want to do a lot. And right now we're at a stage where we don't need them to use all their gears. And that's tricky, but because we have them, we move down the road quicker with more certainty, with less risk. But that goes back to, I think you do need to hire certain people at certain stages. But I think one philosophy I have, which is a bit different, is hire the A team at the start, right? And then you're going to de-risk the chance of getting to that end goal. But having a bit of money does help. But I think people are getting more purpose driven, and they want to say, okay, money's one thing, but what are you going to do? And are you really going to do it? Because I don't want to come for a few years and it doesn't happen, or it isn't really transformational. It's just a slight improvement on the treatment. So everybody we've hired, I think, has seen that, and that makes the next hire easier because they go, well, you came, Julian came, Ronnie came, so there must be something there. But that's a topic of conversation in itself. How do you get the right people at the right time, and how do you keep them? Because as PureSpring does well, I'm sure people will come around going, okay, who's the guys that work at PureSpring? Let's take them for our startup. And so I've got to work on how I'm going to retain everybody.
Yeah, there's that risk. Well, I'll tell you what, I keep a short list, Richard, of guests who, at the 20-minute mark, I make a mental note, like I've got to have this person back on the show. It's a short list, and you've made it for a number of reasons. One, I've really enjoyed talking with you. You're a pleasure to have a conversation with. Two, you're at that stage of company, formation and growth, that there's a lot to come that I'd love to follow along with and follow up on. So if you're willing, we've got to wrap it up for today, but if you're willing, maybe we'll pick a few podcast worthy milestones, have you back on the show and talk about some of these concepts and philosophies that we've explored today and how they're kind of playing out in the wild.
Yeah, I'd love that. I'm glad that it was of use to you today, Matt. I appreciate the time to talk to you, but I enjoyed it. And I also enjoyed, the way you approach the question, because that, people, we can go deep, deep, deep into some science. And I think for a lot of people, the challenge of, running a young company is not so much the science, it's just how do you make things happen from capital to people to CMC to research to development. And that's more operational. And so I found the questions challenging but interesting. So thank you. So I'll be more than willing to have a conversation in the future.
Yeah, for sure. Well, this is, you know, I have no reservations about knowing who I am. This is the business of biotech for a reason. If we were going to get deep into the weeds of the science, my company would be searching for a new host.
Well, don't forget, I'm not a scientist as well. So, you know, maybe that wasn't a bad thing either.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, like I said, we'll definitely revisit. We'll be paying attention to you guys. Congratulations on all the great work to date. For the record, you know, by the way, any listeners who are listening to this in audio who are curious about the video version, Richard Francis, I'll just tell you right now, Richard Francis is like the British version of Matthew McConaughey, but more handsome.
You need to edit that, cut that out.
Good looking man.
I tell you what, I don't sound as good as him. Yeah, you got to listen to his memoirs. That's a great audiobook. You read it.
I haven't, but I will. I'll take your recommendation on that for sure.
Crazy first chapter. Listen to it. Crazy first chapter.
I'm just trying to boost our video rating. You know.
Crikey. Well, look, just make sure your Photoshop people are super talented. They get the Pixar guy we talked about.
Yeah, they're very good. We'll get on that. Richard, thanks.
All right. Cheers, Matt. You take care.
So that's PureSpring Therapeutics CEO Richard Francis. I'm Matt Piller, and this is The Business of Biotech. They're produced by Bioprocess Online, and I encourage you to visit bioprocessonline.com, where you'll find volumes of resources for biopharma professionals and where you can sign up for my newsletter. We're sponsored by Cytiva, which also demonstrates its commitment to new and emerging biopharmas at its biotech accelerator at cytiva.com/emerging biotech. Bookmark those two sites, and if you're enjoying the pod, please give us a rating, tell your colleagues. And in the meantime, thanks for listening.